se și te recoțe, coțe biștine, nu strigure și cora, se lumânce nu le fi mine.
The Giro d'Italia that ended last weekend was the ninth the cycling podcast has covered on the ground, in full, with daily episodes from every stage. Over that near decade, it's fair to say that our love of the Corsa Rosa and its host nation has deepened and broadened with every edition. I was initially nonplussed with the route unveiled last autumn, thinking it lacks sporting uncertainty in both historical and topographical showpieces. But the journey from Turin to Rome ended up both reviving old loves, revealing new ones, and providing a compelling canvas for the racing itself, for all that Tadej Pogacar robbed the GC contest of any suspense. Over the next half an hour or so, you'll hear some of my personal highlights from the road trip I shared with Brian Nygaard, and to which you as listeners were vicariously invited, down and up Il Bel Paese, on and off course, hopefully into the soul of the Giro d'Italia. Host city for Stage 1 and the Grande Partenza was Turin, on the 75th anniversary of the Superga air disaster. Turin, of course, is also the home of veteran team boss Gianni Savio, for so long a fixture, nay an institution at the Giro, but this year absent, though not from our Stage 2 podcast.
Well, Brian, park here?
Yes.
Window up. It looks a pretty safe neighbourhood, but we'll put the windows up anyway. Brian, yesterday in the morning, I did a little pilgrimage up to Superga. Today, a different kind of pilgrimage. Promised ourselves a couple of weeks ago that while we were in Turin, we would take advantage of that to go and, well, pay a visit to someone who is very dear to the Cycling Podcast listeners, dear to particularly those who listen to our Giro d'Italia coverage. He's been a feature of our Giro d'Italia coverage for many years. The team manager of what was formerly known as Salitalia, Sidermec, lots of different iterations, hasn't it, this team?
Venezuela.
In many ways, well, he's referred to often as the Prince of Turin, il Principe. Gianni Savio, of course, we're talking about. Gianni has not had a good 2 or 3 months. He's had a crash running, broken some bones, and he's holed up at home, Castello Savio. I've never been to, in all the years I've known Gianni, I've known him for about 20 years now, and had endless conversations with Gianni in that period, but I've never been to his house, so we're going to go and see how he's doing and pass on the best wishes of the Cycling Podcast listeners most of all. Brian, I'm slightly ashamed that we haven't got him a gift. We talked about bringing him a gift. I don't know if I've got anything we can rummage around in the back of the... I've got a Saunier Duval jersey in my rucksack.
I have a Cuban cigar in my briefcase.
You can ask him.
He's, you know, an avid runner as yourself, and I think listeners of the Cycling Podcast have probably seen even little snippets of him running on the finish line. And he's actually one of the few gentlemen of the world who can run in a suit
and look
in
good
a stylish
doing it.
Way.
And look good doing
That's
it.
That's a feat.
Anyway, I'm sure our presence alone will be enough of a gift. It wouldn't be for me, but it might be for him, for Gianni. So
I think he deserves also, it's an honourable mention, and imagine him being stuck whilst the Giro, the Grande Partenza, is
exactly
in his hometown.
Exactly. Savio Briano.
Sì?
Pronto? Sono Daniel, sono qua per Gianni.
Sì.
Grazie. Ancora no? Gianni, it's an honour to be here in your house. Gianni, I was just telling the listeners, I've known you for many, many years now, and I've never been here before, so thank you for hosting us this morning for a brief visit. But Gianni, we wanted to come here to wish you the very best from the listeners, because everyone's missing you at this Giro d'Italia, and we know you've been having a tough time recently. Tell us what happened 3 or 4 months ago.
What happened, I was running, I have a break.
You fell?
Sì, caduta. I have two vertebrae broken, and one costola not broken, but with one incrinatura,
I don't crack.
So I am in a position, unfortunately, that I must stay in my house. The doctor told me not go. You must be in your house because, and I think that is right, because. Io qui cammino, no?
You can walk in your house?
Yes, I am able to walk, with many attention.
Well, Gianni, the most important thing is that you get yourself well again. And we want to see, we don't care about Pogacar, we want to see you in your top condition soon. Thank you for inviting us into your home. And once again, Gianni, you have everyone's thoughts and best wishes.
Thanks. I am very happy to tell with many, many, many tifosi. Tifosi, the suiveur, the fans.
Larry Warbass was again sending his acoustic postcards from Italy in La Ranzando. They kicked off in Novara on the morning of stage 3 with a guest appearance from the valiant, yet by his own estimation, foolhardy Ben O'Connor, whom Tadej Pogacar had taught a harsh lesson at Europa.
Your comments yesterday got a lot of attention, you know, to the effect that you were sort of a hamburger short of a happy meal. You sort of suggested that the lights were on the hall on the Christmas tree, but no one had switched them on. Words to that effect. On reflection, just tell us why you said that.
Because I think it was just unnecessary time loss. It's all about accumulation, and Geraint, I think, is a good example of someone who kind of just doesn't lose time. He's consistent the whole way out through the race, and then he pounced at the end. He got some bonus seconds as well. It was a nice lesson learned to show why some guys can perform so well in Grand Tours.
I seem to remember having similar conversations with you last year at the Dauphiné about Vingegaard, and you being very aware that you shouldn't be trying to follow him. And did you, forget that yesterday, I suppose.
Yeah, my coach actually said to me at the start, know when to pull the plug when you go with Pog. And I think I just felt so good that I held on far longer than was necessary. So, yeah, kind of cool to have tried. I've tried with Jonas a few times in his peak form, and I've tried now with Pog, but yeah. You have to understand your physical capabilities and those limitations.
What do you base that on in the moment? Because obviously, you know, we're talking about 10 seconds in the race. You can't be completely focused on your head unit, looking at the watts. I don't know if you even pay any attention to that at all.
I don't look at that if you're by yourself. Otherwise, in a race situation, I don't look at it at all. So how do you know? How do you find that kind of like limit? I guess you have to try first. I've managed to hold on before, after being dropped by the best guy in the race, but yeah, sadly that didn't happen yesterday. So yeah, in one way it's brave, one way people love it, I don't love it, but that's what I come away with in the end, just to be a little smarter and know where your race lies. And I think later in the race, in the third week, things normally level out and there's a bit more of an even playing field with the fatigue, and then I think the game is a bit more open again. But yeah, the first days, Pog is always at his best, to be honest, and he's shown that Grand Tour after Grand Tour that first week is when he's normally at his most dominant.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by AG1. If you would like to replace your regular multivitamin with something that gives you a lot more, why not try AG1? If you want to, you can get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription. Go to drinkag1.com/cycling. That's drinkag1.com/cycling to check it out. We'll put that link in the show notes. And if you want to give it a try, you can do so for the first 90 days. And if you're not satisfied, AG1 will give you your money back. Now, what is AG1? Well, it's a supplement to give your body everything that you need that you might not be able to get from even the best, most well-rounded, most comprehensive diet, because nutrition can be complicated. Even if you're eating all of the right things, your body may not be taking on board all of the best stuff that you need. So AG1 takes away all of the faff of taking, say, a multivitamin and various other supplements, because it's a combination of 70 carefully selected ingredients in one scoop once a day. Really very simple. I start my day with a glass of AG1. I mix it up with water, give it a good shake until it's well blended, and drink it. And it is a much more pleasant way to take all of those goodies on board than popping a load of vitamin pills. Now, AG1 was formed, born, if you like, 14 years ago. And over the years, it's been improved 52 times. The recipe has been upgraded and improved to give the best supplement possible. And because we're a sports podcast, a cycling podcast, one thing that is absolutely vital is that there's nothing in it that is going to trip up when it comes to an anti-doping test. And AG1 is tested to ensure that it is completely safe. It's verified and it is trusted by Olympians and professional athletes of all kinds. So if you want to give it a whirl, go to drinkag1.com/cycling.
Stage 4 took us onto the Ligurian Riviera via Savona, a name and place that Eddie Merckx would rather forget. Pronto, mi sente? Buongiorno. Una domanda un po' particolare. Io sono un giornalista che sto seguendo il Giro d'Italia. Sì.
86. So Brian, no luck with Albisola Superiore. Try Albisola Marina now. But that caused a lot of confusion. That call, didn't
it? Makes sense.
Yeah, although some of the reports I found referred to Albisola Superiore. But
biciclismo praticamente, stiamo seguendo il Giro d'Italia. Negli anni 60 è successo un fatto di cuore. Grazie mille. Grazie a Reci.
I looked at all the hotels in Albisola and the current existing ones, and they didn't really find any that looked like that.
Can you send me the photo?
Oh, Brian, I think we're getting warm. We're not getting hot yet, but we're getting warm. Gentlemen, there.
Qua siamo a... sì, ho capito.
Ho due foto.
Siamo a Vigo qua, Albisola Vigo. Sì, allora.
Brian, remember I saw it said there was a curved roof at the end of the road? Just one second. I don't know whether... You see these... There are these citrus trees here. I think this is the road. I'm just going to walk down here, Brian, and to the end of this. Yeah.
Scusi, signora. Lei vive qua da tanto tempo? C'era una volta qua un hotel Excelsior?
Sì.
Sì, però tanti anni fa, però dov'era di preciso?
Era lì, da quel palazzo lì.
Questo palazzo? Sì. Va bene.
Brian, so I found a lady who has lived here for a long time, and she said, yeah, there used to be the Excelsior here, and she said, yeah, back in Merckx's day, and I said, yeah, that's why I'm here.
Oh, wow.
That's why I'm here. So if you want to lock up the car and come down, unfortunately it's not a hotel anymore, so I don't think we'll be able to go inside, but.
All right, well, we found it. I'll be there in a minute.
Yep. So this is it.
This one?
Let's help me with this. We have to reconstruct this. I'm pretty sure it's that building. So, okay. So, this is the hotel.
Yeah.
We're looking... You remember that I recognised the shape of the roof?
Yeah, that's the one.
So, the hotel is that building or this one?
That one. Double terraces there, yeah.
Yeah, this was the terrace. I'm quite proud of us, Brian, for doing... Yeah. That was quite difficult.
And you see those two bits there on the roof? One, two.
Yeah. And now it's a vet.
Yeah. And but these lemon trees, you see those orange trees?
Yeah, yeah.
They're standing the same way as they always did. They just removed a couple of them.
So, Brian, we should give some context. We're here because
One of the more famous events in the more infamous events in the history of the Giro d'Italia occurred here. It's always referred to as the events of Savona. We're not in Savona, we're in Albisola. Can you remember? Are we in Marina or Superiore? We're kind of between the two now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're actually in the Marina because the Superiore is just up the road.
Okay. I knew that this occurred. Obviously, I wrote a book about Eddie Merckx. He was informed when he was in the Hotel Excelsior with his teammates the following morning after the stage from Parma to Savona. And this gave rise to one of the most famous images ever in Giro d'Italia history, and it's Merckx sort of curled up in a fetal position on his bed, and he's been interviewed by Sergio Zavoli, who was the historic kind of host of the Processo alla Tappa, the big show, sort of post-race show in the Giro d'Italia, and he's sobbing. In fact, Brian, I think we can hear that now.
Quello però io sempre mi vuole stare sportivo regolare.
So Brian, that was Eddie Merckx effectively being kicked out of the Giro d'Italia that he was going to win pretty certain that he was going to win for the second year in a row. It was going to be his second Grand Tour victory, and well, a huge scandal. I think probably, I said to you earlier, probably the most iconic photograph or image ever of a cyclist in a hotel room was that one up there, room 11, first floor. We're probably not going to get.
I mean, this could be his balcony, couldn't it?
Yeah, and we found it thanks to a local lady who lives opposite. I saw her up there, called up, asked whether she remembered the Hotel Excelsior, and she said, oh yeah, I remember it, but it's been gone for a long time now. It used to exist back in Merckx's day. I don't know whether she saw my Giro d'Italia pass and knew what I was looking for. But I've had to refresh my memory about exactly what occurred, all of the events. If you'll just indulge me for a minute, I'll read the first couple of paragraphs in the book I wrote about Eddie Merckx, and I dedicated a couple of chapters to what happened. Of all the flowers that were gladioli in reception, the symbols of moral integrity, someone from the Faema team had handed them to the receptionist in the Hotel Excelsior the previous evening, and now there they were, poking pathetically out of a crystal vase like leftover burnt-out candles. On the first floor, in room 11, big Martin van den Bossche looked at his empty bed, then to the one at its left, where Merckx lay, sobbing uncontrollably. Fed up with the constant knocks at the door and interruptions to their morning routine, he had joked just a few minutes earlier to Merckx that the next person who disturbed them was going to get it. When the Faema manager, Vincenzo Giacotto, pushed the door, van den Bossche had thrown a pillow that struck Giacotto in the face. The giggles had quickly subsided when Giacotto's stony expression didn't change. What could van den Bossche say now? There was nothing, so he said almost nothing. In any case, many more gifted linguists had now arrived in the room, like La Gazzetta's Bruno Araschi, who had come with Giacotto. In a few hours, Araschi would pen one of his more unusual reports from a Giro stage. I can believe that they've found Merckx drugged, but I'm sure that someone put the dope in his broth, will be his instinctive conclusion. So, and thereafter, Sergio Zavoli conducted that very famous interview. Brian, I was talking to you in the car about some of the more sort of lurid sort of conspiracy theories about what had actually happened. One of the most sort of intriguing one was that the previous morning, well, Merckx had gone to Mass in Parma. The stage started just outside the Duomo in Parma, and Merckx had popped inside and he'd gone to Mass. And he'd left his bike outside, and subsequently there were eyewitness reports, supposedly, of someone changing the bead on his bike. Back in the day, positive dope tests were pretty commonplace, and Merckx's punishment was a suspension of a couple of weeks. And sure enough, then he came back at the Tour de France a few weeks later, and he crushed everyone. Probably his most emphatic and famous Tour de France victory, his first Tour de France victory.
There's a vet here now.
I know.
But it's cunning, isn't it? Because it's actually completely because of that. The it's a little bit strange roof.
The curving the roof. That's
the curving roof.
Oh.
And then these orange trees that we can see in that old postcard type of photo.
Yeah.
But it's been painted over, hasn't it? And the colors of the terraces are different. But it's also it makes me think, you know, how you always talk about. If a rider's been tested positive, it had a sanction, there's an asterisk from, you know, that era or that specific race. And it's just that it seems like those asterisks have gone bigger, or they've certainly, they were more diminished back then.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this a lot, the fact that the punishments at the time almost kind of reflected the dimensions of the kind of peccadillo, the sin in people's
cultural severity.
Yeah, in people's eyes. And it was only really with the Festina scandal where we went from sort of 6 months of suspensions to quickly they became 2 year suspensions that people started to think about doping differently as something very sinister. And you know, then we had blood doping, and people used to think of it in terms of syringes and shady doctors, sort of Dracula-like figures. Back then, as I say, it was a kind of minor peccadillo. That was how it was regarded. And indeed, as we know, Merckx tested positive 3 times in his career. Well, I'm glad we did it.
I was about to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Once again, you were lucky. You found the right person at the right time.
Yeah, lucky. And luck and skill, Brian. You make your own luck in this game. As Gary Player used to say, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And we've done a few of these now.
Maybe you should set up a company as like a private investigator.
Yeah, there should be a plaque though, shouldn't there?
Well,
there really should.
We should make one.
To Tuscany in stage 6, the gravel roads, and opportunities are plenty for us to venture off-piste.
Ascolta, ero per Coppi.
Sì, ma l'ha vissuto il periodo, non è così anziano.
Ascolti, io Coppi c'ho la stretta di mano.
Ah sì?
La stretta di mano con Saronni, la stretta di mano con Merce.
Brian, I am crestfallen to find out that my old mate Dario Pieri has a restaurant on the route now. I thought, because he was in the clay pigeon shooting game. Dario Pieri. We've just been talking about his palmarès. He was actually a really, really good rider, but he became infamous for being one of the larger riders, shall we say. And he loved eating, did old Dario. So I'm glad that he's found.
His true vocation.
Yeah, it was always one of his passions, eating. He was suspended once for being rather too large for the objectives that he had that season, which were the classics. But our friends from Alvento have gone to his restaurant in Volterra. I think it's called Il Boschetto. We'll find out more about that later. But I've got to give him a call, Brian. I've got to give Dario a call. We've sort of stayed in touch. I went to his house about 20 years ago for Pro Cycling Magazine. Spent the day with him. Ate a lot. I seem to remember he took us for dinner. I got to give him a call because the race is approaching his restaurant in Boschetto at the moment. Dario? Dario, sono Daniel Frive.
Ciao.
No, dovevano mandarti un messaggio, cioè, che avevo registrato prima. Come stai? A mezzogiorno oggi, a pranzo, cosa c'è da mangiare?
Un po' di uova, un po' di fiorentine, un po' di bistecche, un po' di
Paolo Valdambrini. I am a truffle hunter. My name is Paolo Valdambrini. Sorry my English.
Va benissimo.
Allora, periodo di raccolta è quasi tutto l'anno, perché ci sono varie specie di tartufi come i funghi, che sono funghi sotterranei, funghi ipogei, e quindi ci sono il tartufo marzolino e il tartufo.
No Ciro, no Giro goes an old cycling podcast maxim. On stage 9, as far as we were concerned, cycling was coming home. To Napoli, or Naples, as you and I know it.
Buongiorno, Ciro. It's the big day, the most important day on the Giro d'Italia. We have the Queen, say il tappone, but we also have the Ciro Scogna Emilio stage to Naples. I've had a few of these now, lost 2 or 3 years.
Excited, Ciro?
Yes, a lot. Especially because not only today I can sleep at home, but also tomorrow, because tomorrow is rest day. The start of Tuesday will be from Pompeii, so 12Ks from my hometown, Torre del Greco. So, dear listener, this is not only this is my stage. These are my 2 days, the two key days of this Giro for me.
Okay, Ciro, we all know that you're an expert on seaside, the coast, the beaches. Tomorrow, one of my plans is to visit the Amalfi for the first... I've never been to the Amalfi. How should I approach the day? Where are the best places on the Amalfi coast? Not just for me, but for the listeners if they go there on holiday.
So, dear listeners, the first place to be, the real place to be, is Ravello. Because you know that there are two parts in this geographical area. Penisola Sorrentina and Costiera Amalfitana. I have an apartment in Penisola Sorrentina, my own apartment, Vico Equense, the first little village of Penisola Sorrentina. But I must confess, as a matter of fact, the Costiera Amalfitana is better. Landscapes are better. And obviously Amalfi, Positano, there is a special walk on the uphill. It's called Sentiero degli Dei. It's certainly there are
part of the gods.
Exactly, part of the gods is really something that you feel yourself in heaven, because you can walk in the nature, you can see a marvelous landscape. But if you can choose only one place, go to Ravello. This is my advice, and I'm sure that is the best advice.
Ciro, that's remarkably useful information for you. We don't usually give useful information in this segment, do we? We usually just sort of spin our wheels and talk nonsense, but thank you very much. I think this might not be the only time we check in with you today. This might be one of two occasions when we speak to you. We'll also speak to you when we're in Naples, when we're in the belly of the beast.
Exactly, and dear listeners, maybe one day, why not, when I will be no more so involved with Gazzetta, I will spend more time in Vico Equense, hopefully, and why not? We could see each other there.
Pogacar's stage wins at Perugia and Prati di Tivo had as good as ended the race for the Maglia Rosa. Not that we were distracted, but on the night of stage 13 came a nearly chance encounter with an old and still also very current friend of another sporting all-conqueror, Real Madrid manager Carlo Ancelotti.
Last night we were staying in a place called Reggiolo. I think I'd heard the name Reggiolo before I booked last night's hotel. And one of our good friends, good colleagues from Alvento, Filippo Cauz, when I mentioned where we were staying, Reggiolo, he said, that's Carlo Ancelotti's hometown. Carlo Ancelotti is a former Italian footballer turned coach, and not just any coach. By some estimates, he's certainly in the top five or six, but some would say he's the most successful club team manager of all time. He's won league titles in Germany, Spain, France, England and Italy. I can't remember whether that's a unique distinction.
And how many Champions Leagues?
He's won, he holds the record for the most Champions League victories.
And he could add to that very soon.
Add to that in 2 weeks' time, Real Madrid are playing Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League final. So, Brian, we knew that Carlo Ancelotti was from Reggiolo. I did a bit of research in the course of the afternoon yesterday. I found out the name of his favourite restaurant, and I found out that his favourite restaurant was owned by one of his childhood friends who also used to play football with him. The restaurant is called I Toscanini in Reggiolo. The friend in question is Fausto Mazza. So, Brian, we duly booked a table, took ourselves along to I Toscanini. I knew what Fausto looked like. I'd read a couple of interviews he'd done with the press before. And who did I find? No sooner had I entered the restaurant than Fausto himself. And I thought, we couldn't spend the evening there without asking Fausto about his relationship with Carlo Ancelotti, taking a bit of a trip down memory lane. Before that was, we tucked into our quite delicious evening meal, which maybe we'll talk about in a minute. And that's precisely what we did. So here's a bit of Fausto, which I am going to translate.
È stata una promessa della bicicletta.
Sì, andava in bici, però la bici allora era uno sport che costava soldi perché bisognava avere la bicicletta. E quindi a Reggiolo non c'era ancora un gruppo, diciamo.
I kicked off by asking Fausto, and this was something else I'd read about, whether it's true that Carlo Ancelotti could have been a professional cyclist or could have been a cyclist. He was a bit of a prospect as far as two-wheeled pursuits were concerned. And Fausto said he was a cyclist, but it was no well-organized group and cycling cost too much. So he did what almost everyone else did. He ended up playing football at Sunday school. Fausto was 1 year younger than Carlo, but they ended up playing the same Reggiolo team. Fausto was a defensive midfielder, a kind of Gennaro Gattuso, with Carlo playing further upfield until Carlo got picked up by a team playing in the old fourth division. Fausto says he was a bit skinny, not very strong, but he had a vision and understanding of the game that always made him stand out as a midfielder. He then got picked up by Parma, largely thanks to a supposedly more talented friend who sort of put in a good word for him. When Parma later won a playoff to get promoted from Division 3 or Serie C to Serie B, the Roma coach Niels Lidholm was in the crowd and decided he wanted to sign Carlo. Ancelotti went on to play over 200 games for Roma, over 150 for Milan, 26 times for Italy. Now, Brian, I know you found this interesting as well. We talked quite a lot last night about that area. So we were staying between the finish of yesterday's stage and the start of today's stage in the Po base, the very flat part of Italy, which is very agricultural, isn't it, Brian? Incredibly flat, very humid. I talked about
very cold winters, very hot summers.
Yeah, misty, unfortunately besieged by mosquitoes. Anyway, that is a part of Italy that has changed beyond all recognition, because Fausto told us last night just how poor it used to be and how poor Carlo Ancelotti's upbringing was. Like most people from that area, he was the son of, or he was the product of a farming family. Money was very scarce. Even food was very scarce. He said they didn't used to eat three times a day. They would eat once a day because they simply didn't have enough money to put food on the table, and they didn't own any land. They worked land that belonged to other people. They kept a sort of proportion of the produce as a kind of sharecropping. Didn't have their own football boots. They had to play in hand-me-downs. And well, as I say, the rest is sort of history. Ancelotti's parents have passed away, but he still comes back to Reggiolo.
His sister lives nearby.
To see his sister, who lives 10 kilometres outside town. He always goes to the cemetery, also to visit his parents. And he also always goes to I Toscanini. And in fact, he was there the day before. So on Thursday, I think it was. He was there to see Fausto.
And Brian, you know what I heard as well?
We had a great conversation with our hotel.
They close.
Yeah.
Fausto being Fausto. And he's...
What a character.
You couldn't call him a rogue. But he closed the restaurant, and apparently Fausto does what Fausto wants. And on that, and this is a postscript to your wonderful resume of the conversation you had with him, Fausto is not one to take criticism lightly.
Yeah, he doesn't suffer fools.
This is not a guy who lives for TripAdvisor. Let me just put it that way. I was told this morning that he sends people away from his restaurant if he's not happy with what they're telling him. If you book for like 10 people, that was what our receptionist told at the hotel today, a very kind person. She said that if you book for, she had overseen someone had booked for 10, they showed up three, sorry, the others couldn't make it. He sent those three guys, get out. If they were unhappy with what was served, get out.
Leave and don't come back.
So when you ordered your starter, and I hope this is okay.
No, there was a mix-up.
There was a bit of a mix-up, and the mix-up was because you didn't pay attention to what the menu said. And you almost, I think, crossed the line. If you hadn't already been and had a bit of a word with Fausto about
that
what you wanted.
That would not have happened.
I don't think, yeah, no, the interview would not happen. I don't think the dinner would have happened, Daniel.
Yeah, I don't think we'd still be alive, Brian. I don't think you'd be hearing this podcast
Death
now.
By Fausto.
Yes.
But I have to say, I love the man. I love how what he's done for the local community. He now not only has a
Fausto or Carlo Ancelotti?
Fausto, first of all, actually. Restaurant, I think there's a very sort of focal point for the community. A lot of young people there, a lot of old people. I think it's like a place to meet and have fun. And there's only 9,000 people living in Reggiolo. He's opening up another, like a delicatessen shop at very modest prices with high quality local produce. And he just doesn't give a shit, does he?
No.
He does not. He signed off by telling us that Carlo Ancelotti was the pride of Reggiolo. And, well, as we just said, he was there on Thursday. Shame we missed him. But by all accounts, it's quite an event when Carlo comes home, the prodigal son. Not the prodigal son, the prodigious son.
But also, if he had been there, we would not have had a meal because he closed the restaurant for him.
Exactly. Brian, we did eat. I had some a very typical dish from that part of Italy, tortelli di zucca, so sort of ravioli filled with pumpkin. Absolutely delicious. So I Toscanini in Reggiolo, heartily recommended by the Cycling Podcast.
Snow on the Stelvio would make Mottolino the physical high point of the Giro and also the zenith of Pogacarismo.
Ciro.
Si.
You're very quiet today.
Yes.
You're not in your element, are you? But I'm watching the last 0.8 kilometres today's stage, a demonstration, another demonstration by Tadej Pogacar. Try and... Can you find words to describe this?
No, I mean, it was very likely to imagine because it's from the start of the Giro, is telling that this is the queen stage, a monster stage, a stage he knows very well because he trains a lot of times here. So now in this moment, in this Giro, he is capable to do what he wants.
They had been warned, all of them, about the perils of trying to keep pace. But now attempting to follow, even for a few seconds, had become a daredevil's prerogative, a painful yet somehow worthwhile souvenir. An act of gratuitous masochism that some, like Visma Lisa Bike's Attila Valter, couldn't resist.
Attila, it was, well, builders, the hardest stage that a lot of you had ever done, 5,400 metres of climbing. Did it feel like the hardest day that you'd ever done in the mountains?
No, because I have been way more fucked in the past. So when you're feeling okay, then it's okay. I mean, it was super, super, especially the last part. When Poggi catch us, from that part on, it was massive pain everywhere. Especially this last 2K, this is insane. After so much climbing, oh, I think you could lose easily a minute in like 300 metres. It was really something, probably a bit too much after such a long day. But I really had a good day. I could always focus on a good break, be patient, not working too much, and then always be in a good group. So yeah, I'm happy with how I rode today.
And just quickly, finally, I think I heard you say to some of your team staff, you just wanted to see what it was like to try and follow Pogacar for a few hundred meters. Is that right?
Yeah, I already skipped a few turns in the breakaway because we had Piganzoli and Storer who had to go for their GC. So I was just at the back. I could catch a breath. Was also a bit of tailwind part, so I was already heard that Poggi is 1 minute behind, so I was already preparing myself that I want to see what that means. And then yeah, I don't know if even if a minute I could follow him. I had no doubts that I would drop. I just wanted to see, but it was something insane. Some people were I read on the social media that we have to see how Pogacar is on the high mountain days and with a lot of vertical meters. Yeah, I can tell you he's over 400 watts easy all the time, so he's pretty good still.
Hello, Lionel again to tell you about our brilliant clothing partners, MAP, who have just launched 6 individual jerseys inspired by 6 MAP privateer riders who make up the MAP Pro Team Racing Squad. These ultra-lightweight ProFit jerseys are designed with elite performance in mind, but they also contain echoes of the early days of road racing before organised teams when privateers were sponsored and rode as individuals. So the 6 jerseys for the 6 privateers, Rosa, Russell, Amma, Freddy, Ivor and Haley, are each unique, but they're also uniquely MAP, unmistakable in fact. My favourite design? Well, it's a close call between the forest green colours of Ivor Silk's jersey or the blue-black of Hayley Smith's jersey. To see what I'm talking about, check them all out at map.cc.
Pogacar's death strike on the Passo di Foscagno provided not only the most stunning demonstration of the Giro, but also the race's best photo op, at least for the resourceful Leon van Bon.
Leon van Bon, Tour de France stage winner turned photographer, and well, for the last few days you've been a photographer that people have been talking about a lot because you took this picture on the Mottolino, Tadej Pogacar coming past in the pink jersey, and what were they, Leon? Were they stunt skiers flying overhead? Now, the making of this picture, please tell us about it.
Well, actually, I heard about it, and then I thought, yeah, that's a unique shot. So even if it was not working out, I was willing to take the chance and, to take the shot that probably happens only one time I'm going to be around when skiers flying over. So, yeah, and then I ended up there, and I start talking with the coordinator of the skiers and try to plan everything right. And I was saying, yeah, Pogacar is going around 20 k's an hour here. So I was measuring 30 meters because the skiers did 6 seconds and all those things we were involved in. And then at the last moment, always almost went wrong because some guy went walking up the hill on the slope where the skiers were coming down. And then you notice that the whole crowd were standing there, wanted to see it as well, and they were shouting at the guy walking, saying, "Go away, go away." And then finally he understood and he walked away, and then it worked out perfectly.
Were the guys jumping all day, or were these two guys waiting there for the whole afternoon just for this moment?
Well, they did some practicing jumps, and also to get the timing right. And there were only two, a brother and a sister. I was in contact later with them for the photo and the stuff like that. And it was really nice, friendly environment to be there. And yeah, something I will never forget, I think.
You sort of already explained, but just tell me, where did you first get the idea?
Well, we were walking up, and normally we try to not to be in between the fences. So we stop around 1200 meters, and there was a friend of my girlfriend, and she said, yeah, you know there are ski jumpers there, they're gonna jump over the first rider. So, and at that moment Quintana was the first rider, and it would have been nice as well, but of course you wanted to have it with today. And when he took over Quintana, I was like getting nervous, and it was a really exciting feeling.
And I said you've got a lot of attention. That's my impression. Tell me, have you got a lot of attention for it?
Well, it was one of my best pictures on my Instagram and most viewed reel I ever made. So in that way, yes. And also a lot of recognition of colleagues and people saying, wow, nice photos. And also clients who are not here in the Giro sending me messages. Yeah, awesome photo. So yeah, way more than normally.
If I was one of your colleagues, I think I would have taken a similar picture, but just photoshopped the guys. There's a lot that can go wrong there, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm sure every picture you take is perfectly focused on that, but imagine getting that wrong.
Yeah, well, that was the gamble that I wanted to take, and it was perfectly, and you also don't know exactly how high they're going to fly and stuff like that, and yeah, the timing has to be right, and there was so much that could have gone wrong, and it didn't, so yeah, that makes it extra special.
Okay. Very last thing, I'm aware that there'll be some sort of photography geeks listening. Technically, is there anything, you know, the sort of lens you used, anything about the sort of technical aspects of that photo?
I shot f8, 24 millimeters to be wide enough. It's a bit cropped, of course, because I had to take my chances, and I didn't know how high they're really going to fly. I tried in the practice jumps, but it's not always the same. And yeah, that's about it.
Great stuff. And I guess Pogacar is aware of it. He's seen it. Do you know?
He liked it. I tried to make him collaborate with it, but he didn't. So.
What would that mean? You mean tag?
You can collab post on Instagram, but that's fine.
He has his own personal photographer. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you don't want to push him away.
The adjective resourceful can, of course, without fail, be applied to Ciro. In Sapada, he even revealed some tricks of his dark trade of transfer speculating.
Ciro, yesterday you weren't on the podcast, but we always mention you. I think every day we mention you. And we mention this scoop. You're famous now for your transfer scoops. You reported that Jonathan Narvaez might be going to UAE. I heard something different. I heard he might be going to Bahrain. Any more info on that?
I mean, I think that in this case, my sources are good, high up, as in the
majority of cases. Obviously, only God can know the future of Jonathan Narváez, but I think that UAE will be the solution for him, yes.
You know, you have a bit of a different approach to getting transfer news. I mean, you need to get transfer news for your newspaper. I don't really need to get it. No. I sort of wait for the information to come to me.
But dear listeners, I must confess that to my newspapers, normally transfer news are not very interested.
Oh,
maybe
really? They are on Twitter.
Obviously my X or Twitter profile is linked to my newspapers, but you know, in Italy is much more important transfer market in football, you know, in cycling a little bit less.
Chido, we found ourselves just almost on the race route here. We might see the race in a minute.
And normally, you know my philosophy. When I see a cyclist,
turn the other way.
The other sidewalk is for me.
Chido, while we're talking about transfer, just quickly, maybe this would be a good opportunity to reveal, what are your sort of top tips for gathering transfer news? What are what's the best practice to abide by if you're a journalist trying to uncover transfer news?
How is better to report transfer news? I mean, sources?
How do you obtain your information? What's the top tip for, what are your secrets for obtaining information about transfers?
Well, normally the first thing, in my opinion, it's not to reveal the sources. And normally not to ask directly the transfer of a rider to his man or to his agent. It's better to ask other agent for other riders. Do you know what I mean? For example, the agent of Jasper Philipsen, for example, is Alex Carrera, I don't ask to Alex Carrera news about future of Jasper Philipsen, for example. Mm. Because normally an agent about his own riders, let's say, normally it doesn't say a lot of things. Normally agents say more things about other riders, you know?
It really varies in cycling, doesn't it, Chiro? There are maybe, how many sort of top agents are there? 10 maybe? And there's a big variation between them. Some give us lots of information, some give us no information.
Exactly. And normally, in my opinion, at least for me, I have some agents, I can say that these agents are really very close friend of mine, and they don't tell me anything.
I should reveal to the listeners, this is one of the main bugbears of Chiro. He's constantly complaining to me about agents that don't give him any information.
Yeah, because I must confess, yes, I speak to an agent, no? I don't speak to an agent for my pleasure. I speak to an agent to have information. Otherwise, why I should speak to an agent? I prefer to speak with my friends, with my family, with my friends. Do you know what I mean, dear listeners? I mean, business is one thing, but friendship and sentiments, relationship are other things, you know?
The start of that evening's episode proved a memorable one, if not quite as memorable for some, as the night of June 6th, 1987. We're in a really important location and lovely surprise today. We talked yesterday about the events of Zapata in 1987. We talked earlier in the Giro d'Italia about a famous hotel. Well, we went in search of a famous hotel in Giro d'Italia history. That's the Hotel Excelsior in Savona.
It's the Giro version of Hotel Bates.
Yes, and we're in another really important, but maybe little known, at least not that many people will know the name of the hotel. Hotel in Zapata. Linked to those events of 1987, the big betrayal, Roberto Vicentini, betrayed, he says, by Stephen Roach, who went on to win the Giro d'Italia. And we're in the hotel where they both stayed that night, the night of the big betrayal in Zapata. They came here and it all sort of played out between the team management, the riders, and it escalated from there. Brian, when we were looking for a recording location tonight, I thought it'd be perfect to come here. It's still open, unlike the Hotel Excelsior. Not only that, but the family, I think, who own the hotel today, owned the hotel in 1987. Not only that, but we're joined live by a member of that family, an eyewitness of the events of 1987, June the 6th, 1987, Buonasera, Cristina, who was
18 years old, I think.
I was very lovely, a lovely girl. Now I am an old lady. And mi ricordo ancora di questo grande evento, perché è stata una giornata drammatica.
Cristina still remembers this day because it was a dramatic day. She also told us a minute ago, well, that her English wasn't good. We can verify that it is good. And she also told us, Brian, that she remembers they ate a lot of pasta. That's the main
pasta
thing.
Asciutta.
They ate all the pasta we owned, we had in our cantina. And l'atmosfera era molto tesa quando sono arrivati.
It's a very tense atmosphere when they came.
In albergo, per cui non era neanche piacevole servire la cena a questi atleti.
It was actually quite uncomfortable to serve them dinner that
evening. Nessuno parlava e i giornalisti cercavano di avvicinarsi alla sala da pranzo per intervistare gli atleti.
So no one actually spoke to each other and the journalists were trying to come into the lunch hall to talk to the riders.
Però mio padre, papà Fabio, che purtroppo non c'è più, ha protetto questa zona e non li ha lasciati entrare a disturbare gli atleti.
Cristina's father, Fabio, who unfortunately is not with us anymore, he was actually personally making sure that the journalists couldn't enter to leave the athletes alone.
Brian, a colleague, a former colleague of ours that we know well, Angelo Zomagnan, I know that he wrote his story that night from the terrace of the hotel, but presumably he wasn't allowed in either.
He went on to become the director of the Giro.
Cristina, was there any fighting? Was there any fighting between the Vicentini and Roglic?
Sì, è stato un tradimento, un betrug, no?
Betrayal. Who was in the right and who was in the wrong? Was it whose side are you on?
Cioè, tutti si aspettavano che Vicentini avrebbe vinto, no?
So everyone had expected Vicentini to win.
E invece è arrivato Roche. Perché Vicentini ha avuto un calo di zuccheri, non so, era molto debole,
so presumably Vicentini went on the sugar bomb.
Adesso io non mi ricordo i dettagli, voi siete giornalisti, yeah. Però...
Vicentini never recovered from this, Cristina. Afterwards he cut his bike, he sawed his bike and he threatened to never ride again. He was so angry.
Era così distrutto.
Sì, era distrutto, bravi.
Well, Cristina, who knows, we might have another... might have another contribution from another member of your family later in the episode.
L'altro membro della famiglia si chiama Gianluca, è il grande cuoco.
The other family member is Gianluca, who
Gianluca
is currently eating a panino. He's probably
è distrutto.
He's very shy.
He had a busy day here.
Perché oggi è stata una giornata molto impegnativa.
Poi ma quanti anni fa? Il giro non è passato qui.
Anche nel 2018.
Yeah, the giro also came in 2018, stage one by Simon Yates. After his sixth stage win at Bassano del Grappa, with his advantage on GC nearly 10 minutes, Pogacar could no longer be betrayed or denied. His work was half done, and by his own epoch-defining standards, will be complete only if or when he is enthroned on the Promenade des Anglais in Nice at the end of July.
It was, we can say masterclass from our team, our boys. Yeah, last few stages... We were really conservative and all eyes on this stage, so we could really push it and we were really motivated. So chapeau to all the team and I am really thankful for them.
Tell us something about this amazing crowd, all the Slovenian flags, Italian flags, all this crowd cheering for you.
Yeah, it was incredible already. Yeah, the first time we hit the climb, I was not expecting it to be so crazy, but from the beginning of the climb until the end was just... Wow, incredible, so many fans and so many known faces, familiar faces, so many friends and family here on the final stage. It's been really crazy and I'm super thankful and at the same time quite emotional for this ride today alongside these fans. Yeah, I said to myself also one of the final tests also before the tour, so yeah, it was really amazing that I could push really good and I was happy to ride amongst the crowd, so yeah, it was crazy good.
Can he make history? We don't own a crystal ball and neither, apparently, does Ciro.
Ciro, one thing you've loved about this Giro d'Italia?
It's a little fairy tale. Imagine this, a young Giulio Perrizzali, 15 years old, rider of Bardiani. When he's 15 years old, he goes to Strade Bianche to see the race and to try to meet his idol, Tadej Pogacar. The first Strade Bianche that Tadej Pogacar raced in 2019. They meet together and Giulio had a selfie with Tadej, and he has always this selfie in his pocket. In this Giro, what?
He has his selfie in his pocket because it's on his phone. Most of us have our phones in our pockets.
No,
Let's not make it more romantic than it is.
No, because it's true. With the selfie, you can't phone, but it's more romantic. Yes, exactly. But as a matter of fact, in a stage, have you already seen what's happened? I mean, Pogacar wins the stage, Pellizzari arrived second, but at the end they meet together in the tent in the podium area, and Tadej Pogacar gave two gifts to this young Italian talented rider: his glasses and this pink jersey. I mean, in my opinion, it's a little fairy tale.
It's a shame for Italy that he couldn't give his legs as a third gift. His legs, his lungs, and his heart.
You know, these are some jokes of geography, because Tadej Pogacar is born only 100 km, more or less, from Italy, but it happens. For example, Jannik Sinner in tennis, other 5 km, and he will be compete for Austria. Yeah. So this happens.
Maybe Italy should invade Slovenia and claim Commenda.
I like more Côte d'Azur, for example, and I give some Italian mountains for Côte d'Azur. Yeah, why not?
Slovenia doesn't have a coastline, has lots of lakes. You hate lakes.
Exactly.
One thing you've hated in this Giro.
I don't want to say it. Yeah. No. Obviously, it's too easy. But yes, but it's not my answer. I mean, I didn't like the fact that nobody of the other GC guys never won a stage. I mean, this is almost incredible, Hugo, because I don't remember a Grand Tour in which nobody of the first 10 position, except the Pogacar, nobody won a stage. I mean, I would have liked to have more competition in a certain case, and also, why not, Geraint Thomas, Martinez, Tiberi, O'Connor, Zana win a stage and not. So
the Tour, Giro Tour double. Is Pogacar going to do it?
Yes, in my opinion, yes. Well, maybe the level hasn't been 100% of his rival, but I have the impression that he's stronger than the past. As a matter of fact, we don't know the condition of Jonas Vingegaard. This is also another factor. I believe that Jonas Vingegaard will be at the start of the Tour, but obviously he lost days of training, so maybe not his 100%. I'm not even sure. I mean, my opinion, there could be also other rivals, not only Vingegaard, thinking about Roglic, about Evenepoel, but also others. But at the end, in Nice, normally, I mean, we could say that after 26 years, another rider has been able to complete the double. Not with me, because I can anticipate that I'm not supposed to be in Nice.
Unless Italy invades the Côte d'Azur.
Exactly.
The one thing I've loved about this Giro d'Italia, one thing I love about every Giro d'Italia, is the time I've spent with you. You are our lighthouse, you're my lighthouse, and, well, it's always been true, and it's never been more true than now. No Giro, no Giro.
Dear listeners, for me, it's exactly the same. You remain, year after year, my reason of life, and who knows, I don't have the crystal ball, but maybe, sooner or later, I could do a Giro. Not for Gazzetta, but for the cycling podcast. I think that you could appreciate this. I hope so.
Punch in the air.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.